Hello, friends, and welcome to Out of This World Radio with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting today from the studios of KKNW on 1150 AM here in beautiful Bellevue, Washington, just outside Seattle in the United States. The purpose of this program is to raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. And I know that with everyone's help, we can and will make this earth a much better place. I want to thank everyone so much for listening today and making Out of This World Radio one of the most popular talk shows in the Seattle area. And now we have over 250,000 listeners in over 90 countries. And I just want to thank everyone so much for their wonderful support. Today, from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Pacific time, I'll be interviewing who I call the UFO sisters, Shirlene and Erling Wallace. They are incredibly interesting ladies, both from Texas. They recently went to my Galactic Wisdom Conference and gave a presentation there. And I hope that they can come back next year. My Galactic Wisdom Conference next year will be on March 13th, 14th, and 15th, 2020. And if you register early for the event, the cost is just $75. Also, I'm looking for volunteers to help me organize and also with the conference. And if you like, please send me an email to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. During my second hour, I'll be doing the rest of my interview with Nassim Harriman. He's Dr. Harriman is one of the world's most famous physicists. I interviewed Nassim at the Conscious Life Expo in Los Angeles back in the middle of February, a few months ago. And I really like Nassim. He's on the cutting edge of a lot of fascinating research, and I'm so glad he'll be on today with me on my show. Before we start, I'd like to thank everyone so much for their wonderful support for this radio program, because Out of This World Radio is a nonprofit program supported entirely by donations. And for those who'd like to donate, please go to the donate button at the upper top right-hand corner of the program webpage at www.outofthisworld1150.com and just click on it. I really appreciate your help and support, because I know together we can create a much better and happier world. I'd also really like to thank my friends Corey and Saul in Kirkland for their wonderful support, as well as my wonderful friends Maria and Elias in Costa Rica, and Bradley and Gemma in London, England, Jen Eric and Emma Louise in Norway, Sue in Ontario, Canada, and everyone around the world who helped me raise consciousness and make this world a much better and happier place. I'd also like to thank the many sponsors of this show. We're also looking for sponsors and advertisers. Any advertising on the show will have a worldwide audience for your goods and services in over 90 countries with over 250,000 listeners. With that, I'd like to thank my dear friend Carol, who's been designing my website and providing wonderful support, my friends in the Galactic Alliance, who've been supporting my show, my angelic and earthly family, and KKNW, without whose help and support this program would not be possible. I'd also like to thank everyone listening today to please send lots of love, light, and positive energy to Carol, who was in a car accident recently. I know your good positive energy will really help her. And please also send lots of good positive energy to my friend Emmy in Seattle. I know she'll really appreciate your positive love and light. I have a spiritual mentoring program where I teach people how to contact their angels and spirit guides. And if you'd like to get in touch with your loved ones who've passed on, or contact your angelic guides and get some good spiritual advice, please email me at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. You can also call me in the United States on my cell at 509-750-9793, or toll free at 1-888-879-8339. I'm with the Hopi, beautiful Hopi Indians today at the Hopi Reservation, and we have a big event tomorrow on Saturday, April 27th, near the Hopi Cultural Center in Arizona. Both myself and Michiko Hayashi, the Modal Peace Project, will be giving presentations. I'll be giving a presentation on messages from the Masters, messages from Professor Albert Einstein, Leonardo da Vinci, Nostradamus, the Galactic Alliance, Mahatma Gandhi, and many other beautiful spirits on the future of humanity and what's in store for us in the rest of this century and ensuing decades. And Michiko, what kind of presentation will you be giving tomorrow as well?
Hi, Ted. Thank you so much for having me here again. I will be giving the presentation on the message from water that Dr. Emoto discovered, that water has memory, and all the words that we use, the thoughts we have, emotions we have, intentions we have, affect water. And so the water shows how we should be living, and most importantly, love and gratitude is that a very beautiful and high energy. So that will be, I will be showing many water crystal pictures of them that Dr. Emoto obtained.
Wonderful. Now tell me something too. You've got the love and gratitude stickers, which are going on to all water units in the Hopi Reservation. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay.
With love and gratitude stickers on the water system, so that everyone who drinks water will have very high and beautiful energy of love and gratitude.
Great.
That's immunity, too.
And also, too, you've also been distributing children's books to the Hopi as well?
Exactly, yes. So that everyone who receives this water unit also receives a message from water children's book, so that each family learns about water and how we can create the world a better place, living in harmony with everything.
Wonderful, wonderful. And also, let me ask you this as well. How can people support the Emoto Peace Project? Is there a website or a way to contact you?
Yes. If they can visit our website, www.emoto.peaceproject.net.
Okay.
And also, they can send me an email to EPP, abbreviation for Emoto Peace Project, EPP@EmotoPeaceProject.net.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for explaining that. Just a couple of quick things as well. I'll be going to Mount Shasta back again this year from July 2nd through the 8th, and again from September 8, 5 to the 11th. And if you'd like to come along, the cost is just $200 and includes free camping. Please contact me if you're interested. My email is outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. Many miracle healings occur at Mount Shasta. The people of Mount Shasta, Telosians, actually healed the eyesight in my right eye. So I now have perfect, crystal clear 20/10 vision in both eyes, thanks to their beautiful healing. With that, I'd like to bring on Shirley and Erlene Wallace, what I call the UFO twin sisters. They've had many contacts with extraterrestrials over the last several decades, and their story is absolutely fascinating. So please listen to this, and then we'll be coming back again during the next hour to bring on Nassim Harriman, one of the world's most famous physicists. Thank you again so much for listening, friends.
Hello, friends. This is Ted with Out of This World Radio, and I have a wonderful set of sisters on today. Shirlene Wallace and Erlene Wallace, they call themselves the UFO sisters, and they're coming to us live today from Texas. Shirlene and Erlene, how are you doing today?
Hi, Ted. Wonderful. I am great. Thanks for asking.
Oh, good. Good. I'm so happy you both will be coming to my Galactic Wisdom Conference next month. Tell me a little bit about your background and how you got interested in UFOs. And I know that you've written me some fascinating interviews about your journeys and how you've been in contact with advanced extraterrestrial intelligence. But would love some more information.
Okay. Well, first of all, I would like to say this is Erlene, and we are very excited about coming to your conference next month and really looking forward to it. So I'll begin because I think it kind of began with me. I had a lot of interest in UFOs, but and that was, I would say, in the 70s, mid-70s to 80s, and throughout, of course, the 90s. But it really began when I just saw a picture of this, what they called back in the 60s. Now I'm dating myself. I'm telling everyone our age. But
that's okay. Go ahead.
But anyhow, I was in sixth grade in elementary school and had to write a paper. And we had to go to the library. Didn't have any kind of iPads or things that we have today. So you had to use encyclopedias. So I was thumbing through this encyclopedia wondering, what am I going to write about? And I came to this picture of a flying saucer. And, Ted, I tell you, I was just simply mesmerized by it. Mm-hmm. I was so intrigued by the idea of intelligent life on other planets. And, of course, after that, I didn't write about that. I don't remember what I wrote about, but that picture just stayed in my mind. I never forgot it to this day. And then, you know, just went on through school and got married. And then we met someone in Italy. My husband was stationed in Italy for 5 years, and one of the other soldiers that were there, he was in the army, said that he told us how he saw a live body He was part of some type of airborne division, and I can't remember, you know, what they called it. But again, it just brought me back to where I was so intrigued that this young man, and you could tell he was telling the truth. He actually saw, I think, what was one of the graves in a box, and he was transporting it. I just started, you know, becoming really interested in spirituality and life on other planets, and I just started reading literally everything I could get my hands on. I mean, the Project Blue Book and the Andreasen Affair, and too many to name. Stranger at the Pentagon, and I've got all those old books from the 60s, 70s, 80s. I have over 50 books. One time I counted them and couldn't believe I had so many on one particular subject, but I was very much interested in it. And then my twin sister Charlene was living in Kansas City, and she got a divorce and decided to move to Dallas to be near me. And she didn't have a whole lot of interest in the subject per se. She would listen to things I'd read or saw on TV, and, you know, she'd comment, and I think her interest didn't really go much further than, I wonder, is there life out there? Like anybody might wonder. And that was until she had her first experience in another dimension of space and time. Mm-hmm. And Charlene, I'm going to let you pick up.
Okay. Well, Ted, as Ernie mentioned, I moved to Dallas because I had been in a marriage of 23 years, and I felt like it was no longer working for us. And I knew, I just felt like inside of me there was something I'm supposed to do, and my soul felt hungry for something, and I didn't know what it was, but I knew I wasn't going to find it in that marriage, and that marriage didn't allow me the freedom, the space to explore anything, because my husband was pretty much controlling. He was a very successful businessman and owned his own business. We did very well financially, lived in beautiful homes and drove nice cars and vacations. And I basically lived the life. I look back and I'm amazed at how much money we were making. And we went through, actually. But I was having a great life, except the marriage wasn't working. My children were had grown up and they were going to go off to college. I just finished my college degree myself late in life, and I realized that this is the time, if I'm ever going to go, this is the time for me to go. Something's pulling me away from the marriage, in addition to the fact that he had a long-term affair, but there was something else also pulling me away from the marriage, and I did not know what that was, but I knew I had to seek it, I had to find it, I had to get out and expand myself and explore. So I moved to Dallas to be close to my sister. We hadn't lived together in, I guess, since we were teenagers, so because we both married young. But moved to Dallas, and I decided to go on a spiritual journey, a spiritual quest. I was interested in finding answers to life, to the meaning of life, mm-hmm. and why the things occur that occur in our life, and how we create that, or why we create it. And I just wanted to explore the spiritual side of life. As I mentioned earlier, I felt my soul was hungry for something. I think it was knowledge. Mm-hmm. So I started reading books. I read Conversations with God, which I highly recommend. It was just the book, one of the books, I should say, that really helped open my consciousness and expand my consciousness. And then I read Seed of the Soul and various books of that nature. And I started really embracing life. Although I was going through a divorce, I was still happy. I was becoming more fulfilled, mm-hmm. and I was understanding that we create our own reality, that we can create our own destiny. And I'd never heard those words before. I never read them or heard them in my life. And the thought just hit me so strong that, wow, if we can create our own reality, I can create a better one than I've had. Although, as I mentioned, I had a very nice life financially, but the spiritual side was lacking. And so I can create something a little different to make me happier from deeper within. And I can create a different reality. And I bought into that whole concept. And I started just falling in love with life. I fell in love with my experiences, with people. I quit getting angry when someone cuts me off, and, you know, driving down the street. I was okay with that. I said, God bless their day. And I just became just happier. And I didn't understand at the time, but what I was doing was raising my vibration. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, I reached a higher level of vibrating, which allowed me ultimately, and I didn't know this at the time, but it helped facilitate my experiences with extraterrestrials.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Now, tell me, Erling, what kind of ETs, were they benevolent, or were the grays and the tyrannical ones? Which ones did you interact with, or both?
Okay. Well, our book called From the Motherland to the Mothership mm-hmm. details the first three years of my experiences with extraterrestrials from the very first night. And I experienced on that particular, there's so many, it's just hard to isolate any one, but I've interacted with the grays, I've interacted with human beings that worked in different facilities. I've interacted with a group called, I call them, because I don't know a name for them, I call them the stone people. Mm-hmm. And they had, it's amazing to think that energy, that stone can have energy, but they did. They had a life essence and energy, and they could move and so on and so forth. See, I interacted with a being I call the pillow being, because this being looks just like a pillow. And I write about it in the book. And how I interacted with what I considered reptilians. At the time, I didn't know they were that group. I don't know for certain that they are, but I feel like after I've learned more later, I learned more about these different groups. Mm-hmm. And the characteristics I read about the reptilians exactly match one of the experiences I had with a negative group of entities.
I see.
So I like to think and share that I think I've had a gamut of both positive and negative experiences with mm-hmm. both positive and negative entities. And I appreciate now, I didn't at the time, I didn't understand what I was going through, but now looking back, I understand why I went through it. I had to understand that they are just like us. We have positive people, we have negative people, we have people vibrating at various rates and places, and they're just very much like us. So we can't label them all one thing or one way. They're just so varied. And well, my experiences showed me that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know from my, I've been in contact with the Galactic Alliance and the Pleiadians now. I've been in contact with the Pleiadians since 1977 and the Galactics mm-hmm. since 15. And I'm in telepathic communication with them. And I know quite a bit about the history and about, I know enough about the reptilians to stay away from them. Mm-hmm. Most of them who come to this planet come here for service to self activities, although there are some who are benevolent, not many,
right.
but some.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all different kinds here. Have you been aboard the crafts and traveled, by the
numerous,
way?
Different places? Numerous crafts.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Tell us about that. That'd be interesting to hear. So.
Okay. The first craft I was on, I felt like it was a bus-shaped vehicle. It had two rows on each side. Mm-hmm. There were windows on both sides, and I could look out the window, and I saw what looked like smoke, some type of vapor. I couldn't identify it, but I had this feeling I was traveling through space and time.
Okay.
And so an entity that was at the front of the vehicle, he looked very automated, half man and half machine. Mm-hmm. And he and I spoke telepathically. We never really used our mouth. And he told me that what I was viewing, well, I felt like what I was viewing was time. And it's as though he read my mind, and he said, if we had the proper concept of time and space, we could travel the universe the way they do.
Oh, interesting.
And so that was a very conversation I had with that particular entity, that, again, it looked like a robo kind of machine. Mm-hmm. So that was one ship I was on. Another type of ship I was on was circular. If you can recall, maybe going to Disneyland or a park, a fair, or Disneyland, or some of those amusement parks where they have this circular ship, and you stand in it in a circle, and you're held I can remember a ride like this actually at an amusement park. You're held in place, and then it goes in a circle, and I think the force of gravity keeps you locked in place so you don't fly away. And, of course, the bars are over you, and you're standing there, and you're in a circle, and you're looking at other people on the ship.
Right.
And so I had that experience, and the ship's very, very quiet. I really didn't hear any sound as we were leaving. Let's see, another ship.
Oh, pardon me for interrupting, Earlene.
Sure.
This is fascinating. Where did you go on these ships? They just like the first one you talked about traveling through space and time. Did you go back to a past event or a future event on this or other planets?
I would go to various different dimensions of time and space. For example, I went to Mars. Mars was a different type of experience. I've been to Mars at least twice.
I talk
about in the book.
Okay.
And Mars was a different type of experience in that I went through a vacuum portal. Mm-hmm. So they were able to bring the portal right up to my apartment, right up to my bedroom, right up to my bed. And I would just somehow my body would lift up out of my astral body would lift up out of my physical body. Mm-hmm. And I would swoon right through this vacuum. And it looked just like a vacuum or a volcano or it's hard to describe it, but I call it a portal. And I whirled through that. I whizzed through it in no time flat. And then I'm on Mars, for example. That was one place.
Wow. Pardon me, Earlene. It's so interesting. Forgive me for asking this, but what was Mars like? Were you able to walk along the planet's surface? Is there enough oxygen there, or did you stay in the ship?
I had both types of experience. On one occasion, I was able to breathe the air, and I was amazed looking back, I think I'm the only first person that ever talked about being on Mars. That sounds crazy, but it's not.
No, it's not.
It's
I believe
true.
You.
You could breathe the air. There were trees. It was like Earth. It had blue sky.
Uh-huh.
It was so amazing because I thought when I returned, I talked to my sister after every experience. I called her up because she was the expert. She'd read all these books.
Right.
And here I was out there going into space experiencing what she had read. It's kind of ironic, actually.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But I would call her and I said, God, Mars is not what they're telling us.
Oh, wow.
They're showing us a red planet, but I saw quite the opposite. And so I was just surprised. Now, on another occasion, I found myself inside of a building. And I don't know if the building was underground. I didn't get to see the outside of it, but I was being examined. So many of my experiences, I'm being examined. And so I was being examined on this particular experience. And I spoke with two individuals that were working in the white lab coats. And they were conducting some kind of examination. Of which I don't know what they wanted or why they were doing it. They never tell you that type of thing. But and people ask, well, why didn't you ask this question? And why didn't you ask them that? And at the time, I didn't think of certain questions to ask.
Yeah.
I just engaged in a conversation with them. And they engaged in a conversation with me in response. And they showed me a map on the wall that showed me that Mars was... it had mountains, and it had areas where people lived. And on this map, it's like interesting because it's before we had Google Maps. They had that. They had that on Mars long before we had it. So they showed me this map. It looked like kind of like an X-ray machine.
Were they humans?
It had dark, and it had white lines that showed you the mountains and areas that are inhabited, the names of the areas. It was literally a map.
Interesting.
It was quite interesting.
Were they humanoid humans or were they grays or reptiles?
Yes, the two individuals that examined me were humanoid. The man was he wore again a white lab jacket. He was a Caucasian. Then the female doctor came out of the next room, and she was I can't say African American because I don't know if she was from Earth, but she was black. She was a black woman,
mm-hmm.
and they were both. The gentleman, he wasn't too talkative, but I told him about this rock that I was interested in finding something that we had in common with Mars.
Uh-huh.
So I thought about something in the news that had been in the news in 1995. That was where a rock had traversed the galaxy and somehow ended on Earth, and scientists found it, and they learned there are microorganisms on the rock, which indicated that there could be life on Mars, because this is where the rock came from.
Oh, okay.
So I brought this whole story up to the male doctor, and I assumed they were doctors, and he said, and I quote, We are very aware of your findings. I thought, okay.
Interesting. Okay.
It's kind of hard to talk to him.
Right, yeah.
He spoke very monotone and straightforward. But then he told me something, Ted, that I have never forgotten and I've never quite understood. He said that Mars is predominantly black. And I didn't understand that at the time.
Yeah.
And when I returned from the experience, I talked to my sister about it. She writes about it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But now we've come to a different conclusion about Mars. That statement, Mars is predominantly black. We have a different theory on what he was really trying to say to us. And interestingly enough, after he told us that, the black female doctor came out of the next room and she repeated it to me. She said, and I quote, Mars is predominantly black. And I couldn't understand. They were both telling me this. I didn't understand it, but I think Erlene and I, over the years, and it's been, I guess, 20 years now, 20, 25 years that we have since these experiences started, I think we've unraveled that. And so it was just a very, very interesting experience. They all are. Some of the experiences involve being on Mars with the Nurses of Mars. The Nurses of Mars are a group of women that I recognize. And I said, oh, yeah, hi, the Nurses of Mars. And they greeted me like we've known each other forever. And they were wanting to do something with the embryo. I think they were doing an embryo implant hybrid program. And I told them they were wanting to show me a tray with something in it that I think came from me. But I told them, I said, I can't have a baby. And when I can't have a child. And everything stopped. And everybody was jovial and friendly and happy to see me at first. But when I told them I can't have a child, everything, you could have heard a pin drop. And one of them said, why not? And I said, because I had a tubal ligation.
Mm-hmm.
I had my tubes tied years ago because I've had two children. I didn't want any more. And they said, oh, you know, they blew it off. That's nothing. That we won't have a problem. That won't be a problem, basically, is what they're saying. So ultimately, I believe I was implanted with a hybrid child, partly mine and partly the extraterrestrial. And later, I was able to meet a young girl, 8 years old. One night, I was in my bed. I hadn't gone to sleep, but I was placed in this immobilized state. And I've heard that story before. You're just paralyzed. And I always know when they're here because the whole house, the vibration changes, the whole room, the bedroom, everything changes, the vibration changes. And so two entities walked through my wall with a little girl. She was 8 years old. And she looked half black and half something else. I don't know what, because I don't know what her species is. So, but she, in the darkness of the night, lying in my bed, here she is, and this male and female individuals who looked like they were from the Middle East. They were colorfully dressed, just beautiful, long, dark hair. And they appeared to be from somewhere in the Middle East. Brought this girl into my room, and all three of them just walked right through my wall, and there she was. And so she had a gold, I remember she had two, her wing teeth were like, really big, and they were gold, kind of an antique gold color. And in the darkness of the light and the moonlight, I could see her. She just smiled so big, and I could see those two teeth that stood out. And she was so real quiet. She was real shy. And I asked the entities, could I touch her? And I just knew she was me, part of me. I felt that. And so they let me touch her. They took off a little of the paralysis, and I reached out, and I touched her arm. I held her arm, and she felt cold. I'll never forget the feel of her. She was just colder than human. We feel warm when you touch us, but she was cold. And I don't know the reason. Her body temperature may be different. But after that, within seconds, they were gone. They were totally gone. And they just, like, they floated up. They transitioned into, I think they were like two of the grays. And the girl, and she didn't change. Her name was Natasha, by the way. And they were just disappeared. That was one of my experiences with Mars.
Well, good. That's amazing. That's amazing, Erlene. And Shirlene, tell me about your experiences.
Oh, yeah. Shirlene.
Oh, it was? Okay. I'm sorry. Okay.
That's quite all right. Yeah. Well, it happens all the time. Being twins, we are so used to that.
Okay. All right.
Well, Ted, I don't think that I would have to say that what my experiences were more like a dream, mm-hmm. as opposed to my sister's mm-hmm. experiences. And I say that because I think I really, even though I read so many books on the subject and was so fascinated and enthralled with the subject, I still had a little fear. I wasn't ready, like my sister was. She had no fear. I wasn't really ready to meet an ET per se, but I still couldn't stop myself from reading about them. But to get back to your question, one night I had what I think it was really more than a dream, but that's how it was shown to me, maybe to help me filter out the fear if it had been more 3D or three-dimensional, like a real reality. But I found it really interesting. I know that I have been taken to some type of galactic meeting where many planets were represented, kind of like a UN meeting. And I don't know what the nature of what they talked about. They didn't allow me to remember all that. But after the meeting, there was an elevator in the galaxy, and everyone was going back to their respective planet. And I'm on this, it's like a conveyor belt at an airport where you get on and you just ride it. And a group of black people were coming towards me. And a lot of times as African-Americans, we, you know, we nod, we speak to each other, acknowledge each other. And excuse me, I saw them coming up and I said, oh, some black people coming up. And automatically the conveyor belt stopped for me to greet them and for them to greet me. I don't know how it just stopped because they were in the distance and I was on the opposite side. We were coming towards each other. So I introduced myself. They introduced themselves and they told me what planet they were from. I can't remember the name of the planet, but what struck what really got my attention, and I have never forgot what they said when I told them I was from planet Earth. The lady who was talking for the group of just three or four people, she said, oh, yes, the planet where the few control the many. I was like just blown away because of the perfect description of our planet. And I came back and I shared that with my sister. On another occasion, I know that I was taken because instead of being at the head of the bed, they put my head at the foot of the bed. And, of course, I knew I didn't go to sleep that way or bed that way, but I can't remember where they took me or anything. And most of my experiences are pretty, camouflaged so that I don't remember them. But I have dreams in which, one was really, really interesting. Let me share this one. I was apparently on Earth, and I was in a bus. And it was driving down some street. And I believe a gray was next to me. They wouldn't let me see it, but I could feel its essence, its presence next to me. And they were quite curious. They didn't understand while we were driving through these neighborhoods, we were driving through very affluent, rich neighborhoods. And then we were driving through ghetto-type neighborhoods. And they couldn't understand the contrast in our homes. Why were some so nice and some so shabby and run down and ruined? It was just interesting to see beings that had no idea of how, you know, we have this economic structure that controls the money system on our planet, and there are very various degrees of wealth that people either have or don't have. And so I was trying to explain all this to them, our economic system, and why they saw this contrast between homes. So those are just a few that come to mind. Again, I know I've had more experiences, but I just can't honestly remember them like Shirlene does.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Wow, that's amazing. What about now? Can you look up in the sky and see craft and know that there are ET ships following you?
Oh, all the time. Mm-hmm. We just came back from our hometown town of Wichita, Kansas, mm-hmm. and we actually took a picture of what looks like a ship. We think they're over both of our apartment homes, and we walk out and say hello to them because it's like you can feel it, and you know it's not a satellite, you know it's not a star, and it just sits there, and it's just like it's just looking at us. So, and that's happening every night at both of our places. So we know they're around, they're with us, and they really help. And we're working on a movie, as a matter of fact, a feature film. And they've given Shirlene a lot of suggestions for it, and the name of it, what it should be, and tells us just little things about. Add some levity to the script. Shirlene, you could probably tell them more of what they hear.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, it's been a journey, Ted, in that first we wrote the book, which I had no idea I was ever going to write a book, and certainly about being abducted by extraterrestrials. And I don't like the word abduction because I prefer contacted, but I had a little of both. So we wrote the book. And then I keep having these triggers or these urges. So my next urge was to create a website. I said earlier, we have to create a website. And we created UFOTwins.com. We have anywhere from 2,000 to 6,000 views per month. And I was real pleased with how it came out. And a lot of people around the world have seen the website. And I'm just really proud of it. And I share some of my experiences on it. We share what our mission is. We also share our song, which, by the way, we wrote as a result of one of my experiences out into space. It's called Galactic Hymn of Earth's Emergence. And that song, the actual words of that song came from, we believe the galactics helped us. Because I remember I took this trip out into space, and I was hearing this song, the Battle Hymn of the Republic, and I thought, well, why am I hearing that tune? And then I was returned to my bed, but the tune was still playing in my head, and I didn't understand why. And so Earlene said, well, we had a lot of coincidences occur around that song in the next few weeks, and finally Earlene said, oh, that's what's going on. We're supposed to write a song about your experiences to the tune of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. I said, oh, God, you've got to be kidding. We're no songwriters. But she was convinced we could do it, so she got a tablet, a yellow tablet, and started writing verses. And I said, well, I guess I can too. I didn't believe I could, but she gave me some paper. I started writing verses. She wrote three verses. I wrote three verses. And those verses just turned out beautiful. I think we were certainly guided by the positive galactics. And that song has been heard now in over 140 countries. We got a lot of views. We haven't advertised it. We'd probably have more, but... after that, then I got triggered to do something else. I got triggered to write a movie script. I'm really thinking things are crazy. It was just enough to write a book and then do a website. But now a movie script, I couldn't understand. But I never questioned it. It was like, this is my assignment, our assignment. This is what we're supposed to do next. There's no questioning on whether I'm competent enough to write a script. There was never a question. I just got some paper out and just started writing. And it took us 5 years. We've been through a number of readers and analysts, script doctors, and so forth. We never got it quite like we wanted it. But I got really, really lucky to meet a gentleman here in Dallas, a suburb of Dallas, who is a screenwriter. And he has been helping us with it lately, just here recently, actually, since I think December. And it's just about done, and we're real excited about it. He brought it to a different level. So I had the story. He has the skills, the mechanics of writing a script. And so it just came together. We read this first script. It was just so different from what we originally wrote. But he wrote it in a cinematic way that would be entertaining. It can educate, but yet be interesting and cinematic and entertaining. So we think he accomplished that very, very well. We're very pleased with it. And so our next goal, of course, is, again, this assignment. And I actually writing it myself. We took 5 years because, again, we couldn't write a script, but we gave it our best effort. But it just, it was sometimes I couldn't sleep at night. I had to get up and write. An idea would come to my mind. Or sometimes they would tell me, like Earlene said, add more humor if you can. Or they'd tell me a scene I made left dangling and didn't close that scene properly. So they were always with me. And you mentioned the Palladians earlier, and they have visited me before. And they're watching as well. They've asked me if I've been visited by the FBI or the CIA, and I told them no. I told them, his name was Scott, this entity, Palladian. Mm-hmm. And so I know they're around us. They're watching us. They're in our home. Sometimes when we're writing on a script, I can feel them standing in the doorway.
Really?
I could actually
feel like
I could see them, but I can definitely feel them.
Oh, me too. Yeah, you can see their energy is around us whenever we're working on the script.
Anything, like even on an interview, they're around. They are around us now. Anything we have to do with this subject, I know they're there. I feel they're there. And I think they're very pleased with the progress we've made over the last 20 years with the work we've put forth and things we've learned. And we don't have all the answers. We don't have any of the answers, but we're trying to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Mm-hmm. And they sometimes help do that. They won't give you the answer, but they help steer you or lead you in a direction. And you say, oh, my God, now that makes sense.
Right.
And that's the kind of thing that's been happening with us over these number of years and as well with the script.
Well, isn't that wonderful? Well, I have several film producers I'll introduce you to. I just need to get to sit down and write. There's Craig Campobasso, who was the producer of Stranger at the Pentagon. And I know I told him about you in Los Angeles when I was there a few weeks ago at the Conscious Life Expo. And I know he's interested. I got a couple more people I'm going to introduce you to. So I'm glad you guys are. Yeah, my pleasure. Yeah, well, you have a story to tell, and it's an important story, and certainly one that needs to be told. So, and you're doing good work too.
My library. That's one of the books in my library from 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Uh huh.
Long time. That's ironic.
Stranger at the Pentagon, you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful. Well, anyway, and I've just been busy. Forgive me. I always have busy weeks, but I'll set it up for you. They already know about you. I told them about you when I was down in L.A., so.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, good. Let me see. What time are you arriving again? Are you arriving, 10:30 in the morning on Saturday?
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
About
10:30.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. And then you go back on Monday, is that right?
Correct, Monday morning.
Okay, all right. Well, we'll talk more about it off air, of course.
Okay.
Tell me, what kinds of messages have the benevolence given you about our future or how we can make this a better place?
I have not received messages of that type. One interesting message I did, and I know a lot of contactees do get those type of messages, but one interesting message I did get during one of my visits to Jupiter, actually they called it Jupiter Noir. And So what they told me was, and I quote this too, they said, we are re-engineering your genetic structure.
Really? Fascinating.
Yes.
Wow.
And so after I returned, I talked to my sister about it. Of course, she's been my sole source of support in this phenomenon, because this is the kind of thing you just can't tell everybody. You don't go to work and talk about it. You don't go to the supermarket and share it. You just learn to live with it, and you try to integrate it into your everyday life.
Right.
But I always had Earlene, and I know that's why our mission was together, to come into this life together for this work, for this purpose. But she's always been so great and helping me unravel things. So when we started talking about, what does that mean? We are re-engineering your genetic structure. Then we thought, could they in fact be our gods? Did they in fact create us? So it brought, a lot of times they'll tell you things that bring more questions than answers. But then it's up to us to get to look for the answers. And if we look diligently enough and ask the universe, ultimately something will come along to give you the answer to that question. I believe that is coming forth now with many, many whistleblowers that are discussing the subject.
Well, it's hard for the negative entities and the darker elements of the U.S. government to keep a lid on it, because it's just so many people are coming out with all kinds of stuff, including yourself right now. So
exactly.
I think it's just a matter of time. You know, astrologically speaking, this is a time of truth where things that are true will become evident, self-evident, and people will realize that. And those things which are negative or false will also become evident and fall by the wayside. So, and you're part of that movement, of that trend. The planet itself, as you know, is rapidly advancing into the higher dimensions. And,
that's right.
From what I've been told.
So many truths are coming out.
I'm sorry?
So many truths are coming out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, it's difficult for them to keep a lid on any of anything because it's been coming out here pretty rapidly. Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the day when all of this becomes much more evident to us all.
We are too. It's just time.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And people want to know. We've received so many letters, email from people, and they're having their own experiences. And I've helped some with negative experiences. And uh-huh. I like to work with people as I can, in listening to their experiences, sharing them. Having someone to talk to, because it's not easy when a society totally dismisses the whole subject and labels you and creates a brand you and so forth, and your own government, which is part of this whole thing, by the way. That was another shocking revelation to learn, and that our own government's been part of these secret space programs that were involved in abducting people and examining them, experimenting on them, hybrid programs, and you name it. They've done so many different things.
Well, what I heard, and I've been told by the Galactics this is true, that the negative elements of the United States government found out that humans were very valuable and they could abduct people and trade them for technology. And there was an active slave trade, if you will, in humans off-planet. Unfortunately, that did happen. I believe that's been shut down now, though. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's been shut down. Because we are getting help now like we never did before. I mean, to have over 2 million Palladian ships orbiting the Earth, we've got help. We're getting lots of help right now. And we need it. Indeed. And we really do need it. You know, it's the fires in Paradise and Malibu, California. Those fires, they really weren't fires. They were directed energy weapons used by the Cabal and rogue elements of the United States Air Force, and as well as the reptilians, to intentionally wipe out a group of humans from Alpha Centauri in Paradise. And there were some other things too with it too. But after that, that's when the Pleiadians and the Galactics stepped in even more than they have been. But I know we have a bright future, and we have to just do our part in helping to raise consciousness and educate people and to remain positive too, because there's a lot of good things going on. And it's a good idea also just to stay away from media, from the major mass media. So, you know, because you never know, a lot of it's garbage, and it's hard to get a straight story. My goodness, time has gone by fast, so fast today. We've got some time left. Are there any particular subjects you'd like to discuss some further on? You've said so many interesting things.
I was inspired to write this song titled Granny's Rap Song.
Okay.
I'm a grandmother, and I have beautiful grandchildren.
Okay.
We named it Granny's Rap Song. But the song goes over some of the things you just happened to mention about our planet and the things that we've been dealing with, as far as the pollution of the planet, the air, the water, the food. I also it's a rap song I created, and I rap about this. And that's another thing I never thought I'd do in life, become a rapper. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of cute.
I'm really proud of her.
It was a fun project. I hired a recording studio and the whole nine yards. It was fun.
Uh-huh.
But in the song, I talk about these problems with our planet, and just trying to, again, waken people to stop and think about the pharmaceutical industry and the pills we take, and how the very pill we take could end up also killing us. And I put it in a rap version. All the lyrics, they come out rhyming. I talk about the queen in England and how she has
you know, all this money and fame, and where's our prosperity? And again, I make it rhyme, and I just go through this whole song, and I just got it put on YouTube about 3 weeks ago.
I think you sent it to me, didn't you?
I think I did.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, when I play the interview, I'll play that, okay?
Well, thank you.
So I'll be happy to add that on. Didn't Princess Diana call Queen Elizabeth part of the lizard people?
Yes, I heard that. I did consider them lizards.
They shapeshifted their eyes. There is a story I've heard for years from British Columbia that there was a time back in the early 60s, I think it was 64 or 63, when Prince Charles and Queen Elizabeth visited British Columbia, and they took about 10 native children with them, small kids, and they never returned. And
right.
The rumor is that they ate them because they were lizard people. And, well, those families never forgot that, and they ended up suing them. And I think the families won the case. Of course, you're not going to hear about that on CNN or the New York Times, but that's my Canadian friends tell me that did happen. And I have good contacts up in British Columbia, and they said that the case went through the courts, and they did win the case.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I think they won. I don't know. I think that's what I heard. Maybe wrong, but that's what I heard. The case was going through the courts. So,
wow.
Anyway.
Interesting. And it's funny. We don't hear that kind of news over here. I'd heard about the children and the queen and them eating children, but I never knew about the lawsuit that they had gone through a court action.
Well, you know what? I'll tell you what. You know, you get people mad enough, and they'll do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
What have they got to lose, you know?
Exactly.
You know, what if your relatives had been eaten by some creepy lizard people, too?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But
I do.
Anyway, it's hard to get what's going on, really, but I've heard that persistent rumor for years about that happened, about the court case, and that it had been, been ruled in favor of the families. I don't know. It's hard to get, you know, everything's sealed up. Everything's quiet. You know, media is controlled in Canada like it is down here in the United States, so you don't hear much. But that's what I heard.
Right.
I've been hearing that for years.
That's kind of interesting because it reminds me of, do you remember the Atlanta child slayings where I think 12 black boys were killed?
Kind of. Yes, I do remember that. Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it was determined later by Dr. Delbert Blair, he's now deceased, that they were extracting the melanin from these boys.
Oh, God.
And melanin, as you know, is most predominant in black people.
Right.
And they were using that melanin, I believe, from what I'm hearing, is to become younger.
Uh-huh.
And they laid the blame on an older black man. I think he was probably like 18, 19 years old.
They called
him the fall guy, in other words.
Yeah, I remember
that.
When
I went to Atlanta some years back, I actually ran into a mother that told me that a lot of the parents were paid off to stay quiet.
Oh, interesting.
And I was shocked by
interesting.
That. That's what I heard from someone here in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Well, Charlene and Earlene, I'm so happy you could come on my show today, and I'm so looking forward to having you next month at my Galactic Wisdom Conference. And I want to thank you so much for coming on my radio show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you too for having us.
Okay.
Yes, our pleasure.
All right, my friends. Well, you have a wonderful day, and thank you again so much for coming on. Really appreciate
it. Okay, we'll see you next month.
All righty. See you soon. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.